Welcome to my Love Life Podcast, episode number 222, Trauma Responses. It's February 25th, 2024. I'm your host, Lisa A. Lundy, author, blogger, YouTuber, motivational speaker, and something. I am also a member of the Newsweek Expert Forum. What I do is I help people be happy, healthy, and well-loved, even when life is extremely difficult. As my disclaimer, this podcast does not constitute medical or therapy advice in any fashion. There is no longer any music for my podcast intros or outros. My request is that you join the movement and get other social content creators to ditch the music when combined with voice. That would be helpful to people. End of non-musical podcast intro. Trauma responses. Oh my heavens, people. This was not on my list. It came in hot, had to be done. And this, unfortunately, is not something we're talking about. We need to be talking about this, and we're really not talking about it. Before I break this apart, I do want to say, if you're feeling suicidal, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or call or text 988. There is plenty of help available for you. Please take it. And to repeat my disclaimer, nothing I say in this podcast or any of my other content is designed to be medical or therapy advice. Trauma responses. I've mentioned in several other podcasts that according to the research, over 70% of the world's population has at least one trauma experience. I've said that in more than one podcast. So that makes this trauma responses something that is applicable to likely over 70% of the world's population. In this podcast, I'm going to break out trauma responses. So we have one podcast that devoted to this topic. So for the first piece, I'm taking this from a source I've cited and used in other podcasts, which is from the National Institute of Health, NIH, National Library of Medicine, Trauma-Informed Care in Behavioral Services. This is from Chapter 3, Understanding the Impact of Trauma. So there is this branch of healthcare or a movement to have what's called trauma-informed care, which is abbreviated TIC. Trauma-informed care involves a broad understanding of traumatic stress reactions and common responses to trauma. Traumatic stress reactions are normal. They are normal reactions to abnormal circumstances. Trauma can be a one-time event, multiple events, or a long-lasting repetitive event or events. The impact of trauma can be subtle or insidious or outright destructive. This is all according to the Chapter 3, Understanding the Impact of Trauma. I cherry-picked some high points for you. The impact of trauma is complicated and is impacted or affected by a person's experiences, their coping and life skills, and the accessibility of natural supports and healers, the responses of family, and the larger community. Trauma can affect one's belief about the future by way of loss of hope, limited expectations about life, fear that life will end early or abruptly, and that normal life events won't occur for them, i.e. education, job, relationships. Continuing on from the same source, the book lists domains of trauma as 1, emotional, 2, physical, 3, cognitive, 4, behavioral, 5, social, and 6, developmental, which they have categories or subcategories further into immediate, delayed, and long-term. So, also of note, this is of note, trauma responses are not a sign of mental illness, nor do they indicate a mental disorder. Now, some of these symptoms could be the sign of a mental disorder, but trauma responses in and of themselves are not a sign of mental illness, nor do they indicate a mental disorder. The way that this chapter in the trauma responses, they have a table in the book online, which you can see, 1.3-1, that's the table number. And I'm going to go through this. I want you to listen to the next section of this podcast from the standpoint of you going, yep, that's me. Yep, that's me. Nope. Mm-mm. And really kind of mentally, cognitively see what applies to you. Now, some of these things are also independent. So just because something's on this list doesn't mean it's a trauma, but these are, from the research, reactions to trauma or trauma responses. So the first section I'm covering is emotional reactions to trauma, immediate and then delayed. I'm just going to list off and number the items and say them. So hopefully when we get the transcript aspect of this podcast sorted out, it will show up in a numbered list in the podcast and the written transcript. Emotional reactions to trauma, immediate emotional reactions to trauma. 1, numbness, detachment. 2, anxiety, severe fear. 3, guilt. 4, anger or sadness. 5, helplessness. 6, disorientation. 7, denial. 8, feeling out of control. 9, depersonalization. 10, feeling overwhelmed. The delayed emotional reactions to trauma include 1, irritability or hostility. 2, depression. 3, mood swings. 4, instability. 5, shame reactions. 6, feelings of fragility and or vulnerability. And 7, emotional detachment from anything that requires emotions. That's family, friends, relationships, you name it. So there's the emotional reactions to trauma. Next is physical reactions to trauma. Now, I do want to sidebar and say post-traumatic stress disorder was not specifically listed, but post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD is commonly talked about as a trauma response. I'm just giving you that sidebar. So immediate physical reactions include 1, nausea or GI distress, 2, sweating or shivering, 3, faintness, 4, muscle tremors or shaking, 5, elevated heartbeat, respiration or blood pressure, 6, depersonalization, and 7, greater startle response. The delayed physical reactions include 1, sleep disturbances and or nightmares, 2, somatization, which is the increased worry or increased focus on body aches and pains, 3, persistent fatigue, 4, lowered resistance to colds and infection, 5, long-term health effects, including heart, liver, autoimmune, and COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Next, cognitive reactions. This is in your cognitive processing. The immediate cognitive reactions include 1, difficulty concentrating, 2, ruminating, 3, memory problems, 4, distortions of time and space, 5, strong identification with victims. For delayed cognitive reactions, that includes 1, self-blame, 2, intrusive memories or flashbacks, 3, difficulty making decisions, 4, magical thinking, 5, a belief that feelings or memories are dangerous, and 6, suicidal thinking. Behavioral reactions. Immediate behavioral reactions include 1, startled reaction, 2, restlessness, 3, sleep disturbances, 4, appetite disturbances, 5, argumentative behavior, 6, increased use of alcohol, drugs, or tobacco, 7, avoidant behaviors, 8, withdrawal and apathy. The delayed behavioral reactions include 1, avoidance of event reminders, 2, social relationship disturbances, 3, decreased activity level, 4, engagement in high risk behaviors, 5, increased use of alcohol or drugs, and 6, withdrawal. The last section in the chart is existential reaction. So existential means relating to existence. So the immediate reactions are 1, intense use of prayer, 2, restoration of faith in the goodness of others, 3, loss of self-efficacy, 4, despair about humanity. The delayed existential reactions include 1, why me or questioning, 2, increased cynicism or disillusionment, 3, loss of purpose, 4, renewed faith, 5, hopelessness, 6, reestablishing priorities, 7, redefining meaning and the importance of life, 8, reworking life's assumptions to accommodate the trauma. So those are the chart from the NIH, National Library of Medicine, Trauma-Informed Care and Behavioral Services, Chapter 3, Understanding the Impact of Trauma. So the next question is, so that's a long list. That's physical, that's emotional, that's cognitive, that's behavioral. It's a long list of very negative things. So the question I had is trauma, are the trauma responses always bad? This next piece is according to a European Review of Social Psychology, Volume 30, 2019, Issue 1. The title of this piece is titled, "The Social Psychology of Responses to Trauma, Social Identity Pathways Associated with Divergent Traumatic Responses." It is by Orla T. Muldoon et al. So I'm going to give you some snippets from this article, The Social Psychology of Responses to Trauma, Social Identity Pathways Associated with Divergent Traumatic Responses. So, quote, research in clinical psychology and social psychiatry has highlighted the importance of social factors for outcomes following trauma, end quote. Traumatic events do not always have adverse psychological consequences. In particular, some traumatized populations not only demonstrate resilience, but also report post-traumatic growth in response to the experience of extreme events. Post-traumatic growth. Survivors who change their sense of self or change their life trajectory following trauma, that's some degree of growth. They're saying between 30 to 80% of people do that. I'm not sure that's true. But so there looks to be, depending on your situation and your social identity and support, groups of people who use post-traumatic growth to take a trauma and have it improve the trajectory of their life. I have talked about post-traumatic growth in many, many podcasts. So it sounds like trauma is not all bad. At the same time, I want to be very clear. I am not in any way trying to minimize, dismiss, belittle, or demean trauma. I'm not doing that. So please don't take it that way. Now, the next little piece I have in this part of the podcast, I've titled Psychological Safety. Trauma and responses to trauma can leave a child, teen, young adult, or adult feeling psychologically unsafe. I think I first came across the concept of not feeling psychologically safe in my podcast on openness or being open-minded from the research that said people who are closed-minded are frequently closed-minded because it's not psychologically safe for them to root around in their mind and explore new ideas, new concepts, etc. So I'm going to give you 10 signs that someone feels psychologically safe. This is why I was looking around for this. And the most of the things we're talking about psychological safety at work, which is not really helpful to this podcast. But anyway, number one, can share new ideas. Two, can ask questions. Three, raise concerns. Four, challenge ideas. Five, offer candid feedback. Six, take risks. Seven, ask for help. Eight, make mistakes. Nine, be different. And 10, be vulnerable. Well, we live in a society where there can be a room full of people with questions and no one will ask the question or no one will challenge an idea. And people don't take risks and they don't ask for help and they're trying to be perfect. So I would suggest we have quite a percentage of the population that doesn't feel psychologically safe. Oh gosh, I've got to get in touch with people from the Gallup poll. So the opposite things could be signs that someone is not psychologically safe. And again, this was very difficult to research because almost everything, or pretty much what I came across, had to do with very specific work-related research. And it was just was not, generally applicable. So I'd like to now cover statements, behaviors, or ways of being that could be trauma responses. I'm not saying they are. I'm saying they could be. So listen to this list and see where you sit with it. I'm just going to read the whole list without numbering them. There are 25 of them, but people-pleasing, perfectionism, being independent, being helpless, being selfish, being kind or altruistic, being closed-minded, being open-minded, being emotionally unavailable, being emotionally available, not trusting others, health problems of all kinds, depression, anxiety, negativity bias, optimism bias, seeking the truth, strong desire to conform or fit in, willingness to be different, happiness, love, and affection, unwilling to take risks, willing to take risks, brooding, ruminating, overthinking, catastrophizing, not wanting to bother or annoy people, low self-esteem, fears like rejection, abandonment, trouble in forming and maintaining relationships, feeling out of control or being in control. I don't know if you noticed the dichotomy of some of these items that I started to put next to each other. You know, like being emotionally unavailable or being emotionally available. Those are two ends of a continuum with everything in between. And either one could be a trauma response. So the next section I'm talking about is the dichotomy of trauma responses, because there is a dichotomy in the ways that some people respond to trauma, as the research demonstrates. So there are some trauma responses that are at least a little bit more helpful or a little bit more healthy or at least a little bit more positive than others. Do you have to know or understand your trauma responses? No. No, you don't. Could it be helpful in some ways? Well, it could be helpful. I don't know. It depends on you. Like, yeah, I gotta chill out here. I have used my trauma responses, now that I'm aware of them, to improve my life and my future and also have a little fun and joke about my trauma responses. We've joked about them. Like, okay, listen, trauma's not funny. But when you've dealt with your trauma and you've dealt with the pain and you deal with it, you could have a little fun. So the question for you in this podcast is, I don't know if you know you have trauma responses or you know what they are, or this is just your first go around. The question becomes, though, are your trauma responses, are they serving you? Are they helping you? Are they hurting you? That's the place to look. My commitment is that you have an amazing, beautiful life. You're happy, you're healthy, and you're well-loved. You might be in survival mode due to trauma. That would be extremely normal, extremely reasonable, predictable even. I have spent many years in survival mode. Although I will say, it did not look like I was in survival mode to other people because I have emotional intelligence, high coping mechanisms, et cetera, et cetera. So it wasn't something that someone would look at me and say, oh, she's in survival mode. So you could look like you're in survival mode, or you might not. But survival mode is often a response to trauma. So noticing, figuring out, understanding what your trauma responses could be valuable. They could also be a source of humor once you've healed from them and you've grown and you dealt with them, and you could laugh and play with them. Like, oh, hey, don't let me do that, because that would be a trauma response. You could have a little fun with it, or maybe not. Like, maybe you're too serious. But so my next section. So there is a dichotomy, and the question becomes: are your trauma responses, are they helping you, hurting you? Where are you with that? If your life's working beautifully, then probably they're working for you. I don't know. The next section I have, though, is about trauma blindness, which is really not a term, okay? That is not a term. The term is betrayal blindness. But I think it's like a Freudian slip, or I just think in my head, we should be calling it trauma blindness, because we are in society blind to trauma, in my opinion. And trauma bonding. So according to Jennifer Freid, I've mentioned her many times, PhD from the University of Oregon, who is the originator of betrayal trauma and betrayal trauma theory, betrayal trauma can involve a blindness, a not remembering or forgetting or not seeing, which she has written about in her books. She has published lay people books, and she has literature online that she's written about. So it's not called trauma blindness, but I have called it trauma blindness in other podcasts by mistake, because I really feel like we do have a blindness to trauma, in my opinion. So this is very important, because, you know, dysfunctional families or parents, toxic families, bad parents, sibling bullying, like there could be things that we've normalized so much that you would, and it's a betrayal. If you've got a toxic parent, or your sibling bullies you or bullied you, or, you know, you have certain dynamics going on, that's a betrayal. And you could be blind, you could have betrayal blindness, because those are painful things to face, without question. It's why M. Scott Peck, MD, God rest his soul, in his book, People of the Lie, stated some adult children will never be able to reconcile with the evilness of their parent, because it's too hard to face. So, you know, some traumas, you end up being trauma bonded with the abuser, which might not even seem like abuse, because you're so used to it. Well, it's very common, in my humble opinion, to have a betrayal trauma and to have betrayal blindness and to have a trauma bond. I think if we got Gallup poll really working this over, and people understood the questions, I think we know that it's over 70% of the world's population that has had a trauma. We know that from the research. What's the percentage that have had a betrayal trauma? Well, most traumas are betrayal. Not all, but a lot. So it'd be very interesting. So, you know, this is something that can show up when you're looking at trauma responses, because if you've got blindness, if you got betrayal blindness, you might be forgetting the trauma, or you might be, you know, forgetting the betrayal, or not seeing it, or not remembering it. And you might be trauma bonded with someone who, once you really step away, you go, wow, you know, they are not nice to me. So these are all things that can come into play when you're looking at trauma responses. It is betrayal trauma, betrayal blindness, and trauma bonding that will possibly, very possibly, impact your ability to sort out trauma responses, because trauma bonding keeps the abuse or the bad treatment in play. Now, some people have been treated so badly they wouldn't consider their bad treatment abuse, but it is abuse. Withholding love and affection done by your spouse, your significant other, or a parent to a child, under the child clearances and child training laws in Pennsylvania, withholding love and affection is a form of child abuse, or at least it was when I went through my certification, falling under neglect. So trauma could be very subtle. And if you have this betrayal blindness, it would be harder to see. But these are things that can impact you figuring out your trauma responses. I do have to mention psychoneuroimmunology and trauma responses. If you're new to my content, psychoneuroimmunology, one of my favorite things, is the science of three fields that converged decades ago, psychology, neurology, and immunology, to study the connection between the mind and the body. So much of trauma is emotional abuse in some form or another. Looking at the responses to trauma, there is a clear impact of trauma, emotional trauma on the body. If you have a cognitive or a physical, behavioral, or emotional response to trauma, and you make the connection, you then have a different opportunity to resolve the trauma response. So what I'm saying is, if you had, say, a sleep disturbance, or you had a GI distress or something else, or depression, and you put the pieces together and you realize your depression and anxiety or your sleep problems or your GI distress or what have you was your trauma response from this or that, you could then get to work to resolve it. It gives you a different power. It's a game changer. But in 2024, overall in society, we are not acknowledging, generally speaking, that trauma can give you a physical, emotional, cognitive, and behavioral symptom. Because when you visit the doctor in 2024, because you are sick, say you're sick with a cold or you have some kind of ache or pain, what are they saying to you? Oh, okay, we'll get you some antibiotics, or I'll get you some pain. Like, are they saying what happened in the week or a few days before you got the cold or you developed pain? Are they saying to you, what's going on in your life, good or bad? Tell me about any recent changes. Like, that's not the typical question, because we're not doing trauma-informed healthcare by and large. So it's not usually how it goes. Now, if you go to a natural, a holistic, an integrative, or a functional physician, they are extremely likely to be asking those questions. Regular mainstream medicine, not so much, unless you happen upon some physician or practitioner who's got hip to trauma-informed healthcare, like trauma-informed care. So you, as a human being awake and aware to the deep connection between your mind and your body and what is happening, you, however, can stitch it together. I talked in a previous podcast about how I saved my tooth from being extracted from having a root canal, because I made the connection between what felt like and seemed like and would have been diagnosed as an abscess tooth to a major trauma. So if you're not hip to psychoneuroimmunology and your mind-body connection, I do have a podcast on that. The other podcast that would be very helpful on this front is The Power of Your Mind. That would be very, very helpful, as well as Understanding How You Think, which I have several podcasts on how you think and influences on your thinking. The next piece about this I have to mention, because we're talking about trauma and trauma responses. I recently did a podcast on memories. I think it's called Memories, Yours, Mine, or Theirs. So what I learned, what's fascinating, is that basically our memories are completely unreliable. They are subject to memory distortions, outside influences, can be inhibited when they're being recalled or when there's a conflicting memory. This is like, it's like a mess. Your memory is not at all what you think it is. And this issue with memory applies to trauma as well. So you may have trauma memories, and they might not be accurate. And so if you go listen to my podcast on memories, yours, mine, or theirs, that will lay out some very significant information for you. But this does, the memory piece does apply to trauma. So now I have to address ongoing or nonstop trauma. I have to address it in a podcast on trauma responses. So there are certain situations in life that, in my opinion, fall under this category, ongoing or nonstop trauma. Now, that's not, those are not actually words, people. There's no, I don't think you'd find anything if you Google ongoing trauma or nonstop trauma. You might, I didn't Google it or look it up before, but I don't think you're going to find anything. I think that's pretty much made up. But at any rate, here are my 10 examples of ongoing or nonstop trauma, that's what I'm calling it. Number one, a dysfunctional or toxic parent. Two, a sibling that bullies or mistreats you. Three, being made or having been made into the family scapegoat, black sheep, or being in a double bind situation. Four, domestic abuse absent the violence. Five, domestic abuse with violence, which we call domestic violence. Six, having had or being in a relationship with a narcissist, a psychopath, antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, or other form of psychopathy. Seven, having the garden variety abuser in your life in whatever capacity. Eight, having a parent, child, sibling, grandchild, or other family member become involved with an abuser who then strategically isolates them from you. Nine, dealing with someone who has an addiction can fall into this category. And 10, smear campaigns, triangulation, poison the well, and other tactics by haters or jealous or envious people easily fall into that category. So these are common. Okay, dysfunctional families are between 70 to 96%. Sibling that bullies or mistreats another sibling, up to 80%. These, you know, being made the family scapegoat, I don't have any statistics on that. We have domestic violence statistics. We know that's common. These are all common situations in life that are trauma-laden. They're traumatic. They can be deeply traumatic. And I have to say, you know, if you have a dysfunctional parent, it's unlikely they're ever going to change. If you have a sibling that bullies you, it's unlikely they're ever going to change. If you've ever had a relationship with a psychopath, a narcissist, or some of these other people who have mental health disorders, they will be after you for the rest of your life. They will engage in a smear campaign. They will do nasty stuff. So there is this, I have never heard anybody talk about this. I'm talking about this, and I hope you don't think I'm blowing smoke up out my ears, but this is what I feel is an ongoing or nonstop trauma, because these people are very, very difficult. This is a very painful situation. So if you have an abuser or dysfunctional parent or sibling or any of these things, use my emotional processing workbook. It's free to deal with your emotions. And you'll have to use my workbook to kind of sort things out to see how are you going to deal with this. Or how are you not going to deal with this? Or what's appropriate? Next, I have to say this about when children, and this means young children, teens, adult children are involved. So unfortunately, we are living in a society and at a time where a toxic, sick, psychopathic parent can mentally abuse their own child in a sneaky, sly manner, i.e. doing a smear campaign against their mother with no consequences. This is a very serious thing. This can cause mental disorder and mental illness in a child, in a developing child or teen or adult child. This is very, very serious. Sick, unhealthy parents withhold love and affection all the time. And that is a form of abuse and neglect, as I've mentioned previously. And the worst men and the worst women, or whatever gender you go by, create bad divorces, or worse, the worst I'm calling a heinous abomination of a divorce, which harms their former partner, children if children are involved, and can be bad for society. So my suggestion, if you have a child of any age, adult or at any point, is that you get on the road to post-traumatic growth. This is what we know from the research that could be helpful. If you can model this and get them on board, it's probably your only saving grace, because some of the things that I have seen a sick psychopathic parent do to multiple children it's really unspeakable. It's unspeakable. But we are in a time where we're really, it's like morally bankrupt to profess to love children and care about children and allow the level of abuse that we allow. We've normalized sick, twisted behavior. We're not talking about things. Like, this is morally bankrupt. So if you have children, get them, well, you could get them to a therapist for sure. That wouldn't hurt them. But get them on the road to a growth mentality. Get them on the road so they can use post-traumatic growth. That's probably the only saving thing, because it can be really bad. Now, the next piece in this podcast on trauma responses, I have to talk about the pain in trauma. Trauma is usually extremely painful, and it can vary widely in degree and intensity. Most people in the world are not really highly skilled when it comes to emotional intelligence, regulating and processing their emotions, because we are not teaching this. I'm teaching this. I've got the free workbook. You don't have to register. I'm really working to change this for society, because it would save lives. It would save people from becoming addicted. It would change everything. So the thing about trauma is that you have to typically face the painful situation, event, person, relationship, or whatever it was, and really identify your emotions and then manage and process them. Now, some things are so deeply painful. I'm laughing, but I'm not. It's not funny. They're just so deeply painful that you don't want to face them. And you may have a nearly fatal car accident so that you have to face them. No, I'm laughing, but it's true. So, because sometimes the universe sets you up. It can set you up. So you have to look at something. So the thing about trauma is it's painful. I understand you want to just walk away, avoid, or if you're like me, skip over it, go right to forgiveness. That's really not going to be helpful. What's going to be helpful is taking a peek at it, you know, for 5 or 10 minutes, and then putting it away and looking at it, growing your skills and ability on this topic, emotional intelligence, managing, processing, regulating your emotions, because trauma is deeply painful. There's just no way around it. You might be angry. You might be resentful. You could have a lot of the difficult emotions for trauma. But you learning how to deal with your emotions, growing emotional skills and abilities, being able to face something that's painful, that's way better than ruminating over it, brooding, catastrophizing, overthinking it, and just like getting yourself wound up in a ball. That's not good for you. Focus on the here and now. Focus on learning some new skills and learn how to sit with and be with a little bit of pain. I'm not suggesting you look at the whole thing. That's like, you know, do it for a few minutes and then come back in a couple days or next week. Like, pain is not something you sit and go, oh yeah, I'm going to wallow in this pain for an hour. Well, I actually think some people do. They just like wallow and they get in this dark hole, but that's really not helpful, people. So I have a few final thoughts and suggestions in this podcast on trauma responses that I hope are going to be a little valuable to you. One, my first suggestion is bring wonder and curiosity to exploring your trauma responses. Like, instead of being like, oh God, now I got to figure out my trauma responses. You could be like me, where we're laughing going, oh, is that one of my trauma responses? Then we giggle. Like, oh, I don't want to annoy or bother you. Is that one of my trauma responses? Well, actually, it is. And so now we laugh about it. And I say, oh, am I bothering you or annoying you? Because it's a trauma response. So you could bring curiosity, wonder, you could bring exploration, play and fun, or you could do it some other way. Two, do not let a trauma, or anything or anyone ruin your life. You know, just don't. Why would you give your power away like that? People give their power away all the time. I have a podcast on Take Back Your Power. Please do not let anyone ruin your beautiful life or anything. 3, distinguishing trauma bonds can free you up in a big way. Oh, if you decide to change the dynamic and break the trauma bond. Well, we know I just found out about trauma bonding last year, so I've been working in that area, people. I actually had a lot of trauma bonds. So if you can distinguish a trauma bond, that gives you power over it. It's very free. I do have a podcast about trauma bonds. 4, growth mindset. Post-traumatic growth. Use the trauma and the pain as a springboard to make your life better. I've got a podcast. I've got tons of podcasts that will help you. 5, your mind. We have learned from the research confirmed dyed in the wool, thought precedes emotion. Therefore, your thoughts and your thinking are critical to your well-being and to the emotions you have. I would recommend these podcasts, The Power of Your Mind, The Subconscious Unconscious Mind, Influences on Your Thinking, and Learn to Control Your Mind as you're looking at trauma, because they will change your life. Those 4 podcasts will change your life. 6, as I already suggested, download my free workbook and start building emotional intelligence and learning emotional skills. That will change your life for the better. 7, love, affection, happiness. It doesn't have to be romantic, people. You can have platonic love and affection. My suggestion is please boost love and affection and happiness in your life. You won't regret that. 8, self-care and self-compassion. I don't know where you are about taking care of yourself, but I'm out in the world every week and I see a lot of people who don't look like they're well cared for. They look exhausted or worried or worse. Get on the road to self-care and please get on the road to self-compassion. I have a podcast, one podcast that covers both of those topics. Because some of you are so mean to yourselves. It's brutal. It's really brutal. 9, always take the high road. I don't know where you are about this. I talk to a lot of people about this. And I know. There are some people who won't take the high road. I mean, I know that there are because I know people. But I'm suggesting strongly that you take the high road, that you be the bigger person, that you always take the high road. You'll feel better. It's better for you mentally. It's better for you in all kinds of ways. And it's a suggestion. So if you don't want to, I'm not going to force you. 10, focus on making your life beautiful and your future amazing. That would be taking action, setting goals, getting a plan, and then reaping the benefits of the plan you choose and you execute. This will not remove the trauma. It will not change the past. So I'm acknowledging this doesn't change the fact that you've had 1 or 5 or whatever number of traumas, or that you've got 20 trauma responses. But it will change your focus. If you focus on being in the here and now and building a beautiful future, which, by the way, the new term we learned about building a new future is called prospection, it will change you. It will be very good for yourself, and it will shift things immediately. It will put things in perspective rather quickly if you stay on that. And I do have many podcasts that will help you on that front. So no one reacts to trauma in the same way. Trauma is not a sign of mental illness or mental disorder. It's reasonable and normal to have reactions to trauma of almost any kind. You can, however, use trauma and trauma reactions for your good. We know that, and it's called post-traumatic growth. You could learn to the skill of being able to sit with pain, allow pain, process it, and move on. You could learn to manage your thinking and the power of your mind. You could learn so many new things that will completely change your life. I am extremely aware of how painful trauma is. And although I'm laughing about some of my trauma responses, I'm only laughing because I have sat with the pain again and again and again and again. And I will keep sitting with the pain because some of this pain of trauma, you actually will carry through a lifetime. You'll carry it over a lifetime. And that's sad, but it is what it is. But you can deal with it. And it doesn't have to ruin your life. I mean, it's a little bit fun to be able to joke about your trauma responses. It is a little fun. The trauma isn't fun. The abuse is not fun. But if you can, you know, deal with it, emotionally process it, go through all that, and then have a little laugh about it, that's not bad. I know how trauma is hard. I hope this has been helpful. I do love you. You got this. That's it. I'm Lisa Lundy saying thank you for listening to my Love Life podcast, episode number 222, Trauma Responses. I certainly request that you share this podcast on social media so we can get more people understanding trauma and trauma responses. That would help people. I do love you. Hang in there for now.